Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. I'm using my Go mic. I'm traveling. I'm in Texas, San Antonio, Texas, as a matter of fact, with a dear pastor friend of mine, Greg Kern. So the sound quality might be a little different than what you're accustomed to. The State of the Union Address, Pelosi the Ripper, the acquittal, and new revelations about the Ukraine. Situation there. Why did Trump make that call, really? The disintegration of the Democrat Party primary and the role of faith in American politics. What a week it's been. It's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
My friends, President Trump never looked or sounded more presidential than he did during the State of the Union address. Oh, quit rolling your eyes. Yes, I saw that he snubbed Nancy. But she started it. Well, she did. Was it when she caved to pressure from Shifty and the PAC to pursue impeachment against her own better judgment, then crow about it as if it was some big accomplishment for some big feather in her cap? You know, Trump will forever be impeached. Wow. But no. I'm referring to how she announced the president. She broke from protocol, and rather than say the usual, you know, it is my great honor and privilege as Speaker of the House to introduce the President of the United States and so on, she instead snubbed him, dissed him, man. She said, basically, well, here's the president. That's pretty much what she did. It was a clearly intended affront to the person, but she also showed her own disdain of the position. And classless people typically don't understand these sorts of things and fail to make those distinctions. She's introducing the President of the United States, and it's a pretty cool honor to have the position as a speaker to recognize his office when he comes into the House there. Anyway, when he delivered the text of his speech to the Vice President, Pence and the President did not exchange shaking hands. Then, when the President handed the speech to Nancy, she extended her hand to him, and he did, it appeared to me, glance down at it with a mild scorn and disdain and turned his back on her, and proceeded with his speech. Was that a pre-planned snub? Well, maybe, right? Did Pence and Trump agree they would not shake hands in order to dilute the intended rebuff of Dernancy? Well, she got him back, right? She ripped up the speech very officiously at the end of it. But did you know that the speech she had was pre-cut to be ripped? Ah, I bet you didn't know that. No kidding. Pictures of the pages set aside on her side of the desk were clearly clipped at the edge. They didn't appear to me to be torn. I didn't look that closely at it. But anyway, I didn't notice her tearing the pages little by little as she went along. But a picture of the pages laying to her left were clearly cut. It would have been embarrassing, you know, if she started tearing the pages but couldn't get them going, you know what I mean? And so it appears the pages were pre-cut, my friend. We've got evidence of premeditated snubbery going on here. The custom of handshaking is actually quite nuanced. But it's true that boxers touch gloves before they begin trying to knock each other's heads off. And we know athletes of all kinds shake hands or high-five or fist bump after a hard-fought game, and it's customary for the winner to extend his or her hand to the loser. So did Nancy think she'd won? It was what she tried to put across by impeaching the president with a rushed, slipshod proceeding where Trump was denied the common courtesy, the fairness of having witnesses on his behalf, where exculpatory evidence was hidden or dismissed, where the proceeding was so lopsidedly one-sided, even Hillary supporting Dershowitz called foul. So, you know, maybe you think the inquisitors back in the day who would railroad a martyr to the stake and would legitimately expect the unjustly condemned man to shake the hand of the lying tyrannical judge that condemned him unjustly. But I don't think so. Maybe after World War II, the Nazis who condemned Jews to concentration camps to be gassed expected that the Americans would line up and file by and they'd slap each other's hands for a war well fought. But I don't think so. What the Democrats did to Trump is unconscionable, despicable. It would have been an effrontery to dignity, to decency, to shake hands with the devil, as if congratulating him on succeeding in his evil purpose. I am blessed to have a highly intelligent audience. I'm also blessed to have some who listen, because even though they don't like much of what I say, they do like the way I say it. And we have some who monitor the show and hope they'll catch me saying something they can use to prove me wrong or justify their hatred. So I keep this in mind with every show. And I know some are going to say I have just likened Nancy to Pelosi, to Nazis, and to the devil. Well, in fact, there are some similarities. Har har. But actually, no, that is not what I was doing here. Because I know some liberals, however, are strangely literal when attacking us, and then bizarrely loose in their interpretation of their own language when defending themselves against, you know, us exposing some of their crazy statements. I'll need to explain. You see, the point is that there is a time when extending the courtesy of a handshake is itself absurd, ridiculous, and even wrong. I mean, it could be seen as a approval of evil, such as the cases I mentioned earlier. American soldiers shaking hands with Nazis who participated in killing Jews in gas chambers, or anyone shaking hands with the devil whose evil intent is well known, would be wrong. In cases where there is no honor to be expressed or acknowledged, a handshake can be an inadvertent token of approval or acceptance of the evil done. It's one thing to shake hands with a worthy opponent who defeated you in an honest trial or test of skill, but it's something else altogether to shake hands with a snake, a liar, a deceiver, and a person that is evil and hiding their evil behind prayer or their Catholic faith or their Mormon faith, Romney. So you get the point. You're not like AOC, who just does not get it, right? I know that. She goes off on the expression, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, as if when we use that expression, we mean it literally. Getting all indignant and saying, you know, it's actually impossible to pull yourself up by your own shoestrings. You got to be kidding me, right? Do I need to explain the metaphor? Not to my audience, I know, but many of you listening to me toiled and labored in your own sweat and tears and even blood to get where you are without taking a handout from the government. You achieved your success by hard work and personal initiative. You pulled yourself up by your own bootstraps, as we say. Okay? All right. Maybe AOC was also being metaphorical. And so what she believes is no one can make it without her assistance. No one can pick themselves up and go forward without the government helping them out. What was the highlight of the speech? Well, so many things, really. The soldier brought home to be reunited with his family was a real high point for me. The inspiring testimonies of Americans who have risen above hardship and prosper now under Trump's leadership. That's very inspiring. What he's done for the country is remarkable. The overall obvious message that Trump's presidency is restoring our confidence in the American dream. And that for everybody, by the way. And this dream goes way past a picket fence enclosed house on Cherry Blossom Lane. It's about freedom and liberty and justice. And of course, the well-deserved honor given to Rush Limbaugh. Friend of liberty indeed. Obama pinned that honor on pedophiles and criminals. It's nice to see it pinned to a real American hero of freedom. Congratulations to America's anchor man. Many big moments during the speech. And although Nancy tried to steal the show with her premeditated crime of destroying government property, that speech will continue to reverberate right on down through November about the charge that Nancy actually violated law when she tore up the president's speech. It's true that 18 U.S. Code 2071 clearly stipulates that any person mutilating an official document filed or deposited with any clerk is liable to be fined or imprisoned, with the added provision that such person will be removed from office and would be barred from holding any future office. The question is whether the speech provided to Nancy by the president is, becomes a personal copy of the speech, becomes her own property when it's extended to her, or does it remain an official record of state? And I think the argument that the speech Trump handed Pelosi was intended as a official document to be filed or that had been filed with an official clerk of court or office, whatever, that it's property of the U.S. government, I think it's going to fail. Well, maybe not. But if you, through a FOIA petition, received copies of official documents, you would not be considered in violation of this statute if you ran them through a shredder after you finished using them. But what about Nancy's charge that all she ripped up was the State of Trump's Mind address, or that she shredded his speech because in the speech he shredded the truth? And you've noticed that's the echo, right? The speech was full of lies. Trump lied. It just never ends. And the obvious response is, well, okay, name one, because if there was a lie in there somewhere, I'd sure like to know about it, and I'd like to run it down, to which they respond with, the speech was full of lies. And you might as well give up trying to get them to become specific, because if they become specific, they lose, right? They are aware that Trump is getting his numbers from reliable sources. They know the numbers are real. You remember what went on with Obama, how they artificially hid how really bad the job numbers were by removing from the number all who gave up looking for a job? And we would argue with them back and forth. They'd point to a number and say, this number came from the government, so it's a real number. And then we would say, yeah, but you guys changed the rules. You know, used to count all able-bodied people who are out of work. Now you only count those on unemployment who are attempting to find work but can't find it. So while figures don't lie, liars figure. And we all know that statistics can be manipulated to say almost anything you want to say. So some of the Obama holdovers lurking in the deep waters of the swamp bend the numbers and manipulate the math and put out these studies that refute the other studies that are put together by other government officials. And so, but you can trust me on this one. If they had hard evidence that the job numbers or the economy was bad, that evidence would be out there 24/7. So all they can say is he lied. And that'll be because of some minor little misstatement this way, that way. It's just getting nauseating. I mean, it's the same with the impeachment travesty that has happily become a debacle. All they could do is bring witnesses who gave testimony to their opinions about what Trump's state of mind might have been or was or whatever their idea. It's absurd. The Democrats are utter failures at everything they do. Every city they run, that they run for any time at all, is running to the ground. You need a map to get around the people do all over the sidewalks in San Francisco. They can't even count the votes in their own primary and get it right. And I'm talking about Iowa. I prayed and fasted and prayed. Our church prayed and fasted. We had 40 days of prayer and so on. God, please show the American people who these people really are. Put it on display. Let America see the truth about what the Democrat Party has become. And wow, what a powerful answer to prayer we have received. I mean, it's jaw-dropping, and it's worse than I thought. The Democrats have failed at everything they've talked about doing for decades, but they've been able to hide their failure behind smooth talk, double talk, and pointing the finger at someone else, shifting the blame, this kind of thing, and keeping their opponents down and marginalized and not listened to by using something called the politics of personal destruction. But God has raised up a man who simply will not be intimidated. He will not be cowed by their smear tactics. He just holds his head up, goes right back, and puts it right back at him. You know? And I appreciate that, by the way. I used to get sick to my stomach watching Bush get banged on and hit on and not saying anything. Now, talking about prayer. The prayer breakfast event following the acquittal. Trump holds up the headlines, Trump acquitted, declaring his distaste for people who use their faith to justify doing something they know is wrong. And then those phony people who say they're praying for you, when it's obvious they have no good intent towards you at all. You've never heard a president talk like this man. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, he talks like a real person, right? He's constantly accused of being dishonest, but this president is the most frank and honest president we've ever seen. He doesn't shake hands with phonies. He's not going to engage in the pretensions that are typically expected from sophists, you know, as Rush has called them, country club Republicans and so on. In Trump's world, if you're a scumbag, he's very likely to call you one. If you beg him to endorse you for your run for office, as Romney did, and then when it's time for Trump to ask you for your endorsement, you withhold it. And Trump gets irritated and just calls you out for being a phony. Well, that's just the way he is. That's his personality, my friend. That's his character, really. If you pull the stuff that Pelosi has pulled on him, well, he's not going to have any respect for you. And he's not going to pretend otherwise. Folks, I'm loving this. I'm the same way. I people who know me know I just don't do well with backstabbing, lying about you people and meeting them in public, and then I have to pretend that we're some kind of friends. I just hate that. I hate phony, pretentious nonsense, and I appreciate this president because he's honest. Hold on to the break. I'll be right back.
God's War: Why Christians Should Rule the World. A shocking statement to many, but our founders didn't think so. John Jay believed Christians should prefer believers to rule our nation because Jesus is the king and all mankind are subject to his crown. Our founding fathers understood this and acknowledged Christ as king. Satan once boasted all the kingdoms of the world were his, but no longer, because when Jesus died on the cross, he broke the power of Satan over this world and cast the prince of this world out. When Jesus rose from the grave, he declared, "All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth." Jesus sent his spirit into the world, and where the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. But where the spirit of Antichrist is, there is tyranny. The spirit of Jesus Christ is greater than the spirit of Antichrist. Now, you can learn how to unleash the power of Christ into the world to defeat the spirit of Antichrist. Learn how you can defend liberty through the authority of Jesus Christ. Free the world from the spirit of tyranny. Get God's War: Why Christians Should Rule the World today. Go to www.books@dbp.com.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California. Your brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, and anybody that would steal from us our liberty.
Pastor Scheidbach is on
the air. I hope you're listening to the other side. I mean, the Democrat deluded Trump haters supporting the party that can't do anything right. They very regularly take their shots at Trump and his supporters. Please listen to that. He's right. They're after us. And don't let their bumbling nonsense make you overconfident. They can't do anything right. That's certainly true. They botched everything. They had no case in that impeachment trial in the first place. They pushed it through anyway. They admitted they had no case when they started calling on the Senate to do the job that they obviously did not get done. And basically, that's because there was no case to make. It was constructed entirely upon hearsay evidence. And all they really want to do is extend this and keep it going. I'll explain why in a little bit. It all amounted to presumptions about what the president meant by what he said to the Zelensky, not about what he said. And then they botched their first primary. I mean, coming out of the gate, these guys stumble all over themselves. They can't even count votes right. So for Democrats, the Iowa primary votes are frozen, I understand. I think that what happened is they began noticing too many Democrat votes for Trump. Democrats for Trump, you know, they want to draft Trump to get the Democrat nomination. So what will the Democrats do now that Trump has been acquitted? Well, exactly what we all expected that they would do. Impeach him again. They'll keep on impeaching Trump because they don't have anything else they can do. Impeachment didn't help them in the polls, though, you know. It has not reduced Trump's appeal to his base, and it has actually enhanced his appeal to moderate Democrats. So why would they continue sawing off the branch they're sitting on? Well, Glenn Beck recently brought out some new revelations about the Ukraine situation that might explain all this. Actually, it goes to something that I've been saying and others also right along. This whole thing is a desperate attempt to cover up for the Bidens and for the Obama administration. But Beck has brought some things out that kind of give us some insight into what might be going on here. The Democrats must protect Biden and the Obama administration. They thought Obama would carry them forward to the full transformation of America. But their effort has unraveled, and they're trying to regain the momentum they imagined that they had with Obama. Now, you can view Beck's entire episode at #UkraineTheFinalPiece. Apparently, a document has surfaced that reveals why Trump was interested in the Biden allegations being investigated in Ukraine before he would release the funds. Beck shows the timeline leading up to the July 25 call to Zelensky, created by the Dems, is a farce, a fake. It was fabricated specifically to hide the real timeline, the real events that led to that call. Now, here's the timeline that Beck put together. September 2014, $1.8 billion U.S. dollars disappeared from Moisky's Privat Bank. Not real clear in the pronunciation, forgive me. Where did this money go? Well, Privat Bank is linked to Burisma. Burisma was suspected of corruption, and Privat Bank was funding the war with Russia. December 2016, Ukraine seized Privat Bank from Kolomisky, accusing him of enriching himself on IMF funding. Now, this involves another $7 billion American dollars. What motivated Ukraine to seize assets of Privat Bank? Well, now we're going to back up a little bit to see what led to this. Well, an election happened in America in which Trump beat Hillary with a campaign focused on addressing corruption, and it was clear what was coming next. This happened in November of 2016, of course, and by December, Ukraine decided to start cleaning up their act. After that Ukrainian bank was seized, money was to begin going to Ukraine again, but the Trump administration wanted some token of trust from Ukraine, something more than promises. In response to this, an IMF mission visiting Kiev toward the end of May indicated recent developments with their new government opened the door for the team to stand ready to return to Kiev in order to continue discussions after the new government would show good faith in dealing with corruption. Then comes the July 25 phone call. On the same day of that call, the International Monetary Fund people had a press conference to announce the approval of a $5 billion loan to Ukraine and stating that $3.5 billion was ready to be disbursed. However, the IMF indicated a need for what is called an obligating event. Now, this was sent on the same day as the phone call, this requirement for an obligating event. You see, this is essentially what Trump was asking Zelensky to provide, to show good faith in their attempt to get rid of corruption. So September 10, the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, sent an email about an obligating event. And what was that event? Well, right after that, Zelensky meets with Kolomoisky, and it is believed he likely informed him of a planned raid on his offices and on Burisma. When this was done on the next day, September 11, the raid took place on Privat Bank, collecting evidence regarding the missing $1.8 billion and the fraudulent misuse of IMF funds, and then the aid was released. The interest in investigating Biden had to do with understanding his part and the part of the Obama administration in the funny stuff going on with the missing $1.8 billion and the funny stuff going on with the $7 billion misused by Ukraine. And this was all tied to Burisma, where Biden's son worked, and the Privat Bank. Now, the president released military aid when he saw the raid took place, and that was the event he was looking for. Media tells us it was about politics, but it's actually about missing $1.8 billion in which Burisma is implicated, a company Joe Biden's son worked for, and the suspicious interference of the vice president, Biden, in the investigation of Burisma. All right, this whole thing is very strange. And the picture that is beginning to emerge is that in concert with the Obama administration, Ukraine was using this money to wage war with Russia. Meanwhile, Biden was siphoning off some for himself and his son. It's beginning to look like Obama did not want to openly support Ukraine against Russia. Who knows why, but he used this chicanery to hide from Russia and from America his secret war with Russia. The truth was dangerous for the Bidens because they were personally benefiting from this. They were raking in millions in the process. You see, the Privat Bank was funding the war with Russia, using our money to do it. Obama lied to the American people, took the congressional authority for war powers into his own hands, and illegally engaged in a foreign war against Russia through Ukraine. But he did not want Russia or America to know about it. At least that's what this is beginning to look like. So we'll see where it all leads. Slowly, however, the truth is emerging, and we will, Lord willing, have the complete picture before too long. I want to conclude the show today by addressing something I heard in an exchange between Tony Perkins and Fox News host Shannon Bream. She closed the conversation saying, quote, "I think most of us want our religion to be politically free, at least as much as possible," end quote. And that caught my attention. Because, you know what, I remember a time when I was fastidious about segregating my personal political interests and opinions from my religious beliefs or the articulation of them. And I still do to some measure, but not so much anymore. And here's what happened. Once upon a time, America shared a common set of religious values, and it was possible to have political differences that didn't involve religious differences. But today, politics has become religious. Politics has encroached into religious issues. Politics has been totally mixed up with religion today, and not by conservatives. This mixing of church and state was done by liberals. Many don't know it, but Saul Alinsky was a strong advocate for political activism through churches. He saw the churches as a powerful grassroots organization through which, if motivated and guided and really deceived, could be tricked into being used to fuel radical social and political change. While we were sleeping, Alinsky and his radical recruits began using churches to advance very specific political objectives. Now look, all values come from what we believe about right and wrong. I mean, every law comes from someone's idea of what's right and what's wrong. Our view of right and wrong is instructed by our religious beliefs. Whether that religion is atheism, which is a religious notion that there is no God, or Catholicism, or Christianity, or Islam, or Hindu, or whatever. Our ideas of right and wrong are shaped by our moral training. And once upon a time in America, we had a shared common core of moral beliefs. In that situation, someone could argue about whether we should tax people X dollars or XX dollars, right? And yet share a common core of values and beliefs. We could debate over what is our personal responsibility to share our wealth with the poor and needy, and how much of this should be done collectively. You know, whether we should have laws prohibiting child labor altogether, or whether we should say families can have their own children work in their own businesses. These are debates that could go on between people who shared a common set of values and beliefs, and we would debate about the legitimate role of government. But today, it's not like that. Today, we have a radical divide at the heart of American traditional values. Christians have been very patient, in all honesty, really, and tolerant. Christians have been open to arguments such as, you can't impose your religion on everyone else. And of course, we agree with that. Christian evangelicals totally believe in soul liberty and freedom of the conscience, freedom of religion. So believing that, we tend to make room for greater and greater departures from our once shared common morality. And those who cry, we will not have Jesus to reign over us, right? Those who rage and take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away the cords from us, Psalm 2. Well, these folks, the children of disobedience, began to gain greater and greater political control in our country. And they literally intimidated many Christians to not speak at all. They put a muzzle on our mouth. And it was terrible. But anyway, as they gained greater political control, they started forcing their own immorality on all of us. Yeah, they began using the coercive power of government to bring us under laws that are contrary to our faith and that put us in a position to, as Hillary openly said, choose between our religious beliefs and our political standing in the communities. Now, I'm going to speak to this some more, but you really need to get my book. It provides biblical insight into the spiritual side of how this developed and what's going on in America. It explains what Christians can do to fight back against the encroachment against our inalienable rights. But in answer to Bream's question, we can no longer separate religion from politics because politics has been all mixed up with religion by the left. And furthermore, it's never really been otherwise, in all honesty. It's just that for so long a time, the presumptive religion that instructed the conscience of Americans has been Christianity. But they are transforming America from a Christian nation into an anti-Christian nation. Don't let them tell you secular, because secular is anti-Christ. So anyway, we need to stand. And that's our theme of the Lighthouse for 2020. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.